Coming up on Simply Superior.
Simply Superior news and issues from a superior point of view.
And no drag. Papa's got a brand new bag.
If you're shopping in Duluth, you'll need a brand new bag or maybe an old one. We'll check in on how the city's plastic bag ordinance is working. Plus, they spent the pandemic composing and recording. Now Rich Mattson and Jermaine Gimberling are sharing their music. And an update on the tragic killings in Duluth this week after this.
News and issues from a superior point of view.
And no drag. Papa's got a brand new bag.
If you're shopping in Duluth, you'll need a brand new bag or maybe an old one. We'll check in on how the city's plastic bag ordinance is working. Plus, they spent the pandemic composing and recording. Now Rich Mattson and Jermaine Gimberling are sharing their music. And an update on the tragic killings in Duluth this week.
Every pattern wins.
Welcome to Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington. We'll get to our Earth Day segment in a moment, as well as our musical guests. But first, there are no words to describe the tragedy that hit Duluth this week, with the death of four East Hillside family members, apparently at the hands of another, who then took his own life. The incident was discovered midday Wednesday, and more than 24 hours later, details were still emerging. Joining me is Rick Lubbers, executive editor of the Duluth News Tribune. And this is a true tragedy, Rick.
Yes, it is, Robin. Duluth police confirmed Thursday afternoon that 29-year-old Brandon Taylor Cole Skolstad shot and killed four relatives, a dog, and then himself on Wednesday in the East Hillside neighborhood. According to Duluth police, the victims were all related to Cole Skolstad, an aunt, an uncle, and two female cousins, ages 47, 44, 12, and 9. Shortly after noon Wednesday, the Duluth Police Department responded to a report of an individual experiencing a mental health crisis. That call originated just after 11:18 a.m. In Hermantown as a welfare check, but Hermantown police were unable to locate or contact him. So Duluth police received information that he had access to a weapon and approached a house in Duluth East Hillside at 12:30 p.m. And as they knocked on the door, officers heard what they believed to be a gunshot. Police retreated, requested mutual aid from the St. Louis County Sheriff's Office and the Superior Police Department. Shortly after 3 p.m. Wednesday, Duluth police and their tactical team searched the house and located five bodies and the family dog. After a preliminary investigation, police determined that he had shot the victims while they were sleeping. A weapon was found close to Cole Skolstad, and Duluth and Hermantown police searched 911 history and did not find any previous calls showing a pattern of behavior regarding him. The investigation is ongoing.
And our hearts go out to the family members, as well as all affected by this truly terrible event. You'll come back and join us for a regular news roundup later in the show?
Yes.
Well, we'll see you then. And we'll continue with our regular show. Today is Earth Day, and when I first joined this show 3 years ago, we had a discussion with several people working in the recycling field about what to do with your bottles and cans and how to avoid creating consumer waste in the first place. One of those initiatives was a proposal for the city of Duluth to impose a fee on plastic bags, which may have seemed like a radical idea at the time, but it did pass the city council. Yet it didn't take effect for more than a year because of the pandemic and the feeling that plastic bags may have been needed as we were all trying to stay as sterile as possible. Well, last October it did take effect, and what was the result? Here to talk about it is one of our guests from back then, Jamie Harvey, a leader of the campaign Bagot Duluth. Welcome to Simply Superior, Jamie Harvey.
Great to be here, Robin. Look forward to this conversation.
We also invited a representative from the Association of Plastic Recyclers, which is one of the groups that opposes any similar bag ban or fees in Wisconsin, but they declined to appear. Later in the show, we'll tell you about their efforts in the legislature that may have restricted any such ban from happening in Wisconsin. But Jamie, what's going on today at stores in Duluth?
Well, I was in a pharmacy the other night and went through the checkout line, and the checkout clerk asked if I was interested in a plastic bag. Or they asked me if I was interested in the bag, and I declined. And then I asked them whether there was still that fee on bags, and she said that indeed there was. And I was asked that question because I was just curious about what level of, you know, training and education the clerks and checkout people in our stores are receiving. But I was heartened by the question as to whether I wanted a bag, because that is not something that used to happen in the past. And I've had similar experiences in stores around Duluth, and I've spoken with colleagues, and that seems to be the case. So what seems to be happening is that we are making that shift, which seemed insurmountable to some of our elected officials. And like many, 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 many cities across the country and across the globe are successfully making the shift away from single-use carry-out bags.
You know, it's interesting you should mention a pharmacy, because that is the one area where I do, or the one type of store where I do forget my own bag. I'll just name them, Super One, because they've been very good about this. We invited them on a show, too, and perhaps they could join us at some point. But in any case, in the very beginning of the ban, we call it ban or fee or something like that, I was already using my own bags, you know, when I remember when possible. So now I've put them on the doorknob to my, you know, outside door to remember to take them in the car. And we do take them to the car. But in the beginning, I have to say, I kept forgetting them in the car. I had to walk back out of the store to go get them, and now I'm kind of trained. But I don't remember in every store, and that's interesting because the pharmacy is one I don't think about. If I'm picking up my medicines, you know, obviously they're not very big, and they come in their own paper bags that I think, you know, are part of a pharmacy law. I mean, you know, they don't just hand you prescriptions, right? So that's when they ask, do you want another bag or a plastic bag? And I usually decline. You do see me walking out of the store, you know, cradling if I got a whole bunch of meds that day and hoping I don't drop any. And at some point I'll remember them. Okay, that's enough of Robin's foibles on it. But all of this, I guess I'm saying, I would count the whole thing, whether you've done so or not, as a success. I'm not seeing that much confusion. And I, you know what I have not seen, and maybe you could tell me otherwise, I haven't seen anyone arguing about it with the clerks.
I have not seen that, though. You know, I haven't done interviews, and we've, as a volunteer campaign, quite frankly, we're exhausted by the end of the campaign. we just haven't summoned the resources to do some post-implementation inquiries around with our retailers. But mm-hmm. For the most part, as we did in the midst of the campaign, we would look at social media and follow the conversation there. And again, haven't really seen any pushback, and frankly, seen lots of community members saying, this is something that we can do. This is, and they were saying that even before the fee. And so, again, I, and letters to the editor, I haven't seen complaints about hardship or anything. And so, again, all of this suggests, not necessarily a scientific analysis, but anecdotally, it just seems, again, to be the success which we were suggesting 3 years ago and after many, 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 many conversations.
I'm wondering if part of it is that you had the delay due to the pandemic. If people thought it was draconian, you know, you're going to, oh my, have to bring those bags or pay or whatever. They did end up getting like, I think it was a year, right? Or at least 6 months or something like that to think about it. So nobody really was surprised when it happened. And again, you had time to prepare. Do you think that helped?
Oh, Robin, you're dredging up some old and painful memory. And so when this was first introduced, it wasn't a radical idea, as you suggested at the end of your introduction. You know, many, many states, I can't remember the number, but at least a dozen states, huge cities across the United States and Canada had already done what we were suggesting. And so the means to do this and to educate people and what was needed was not new information. It was there. It had been tried and tested again and again and again. And I think that's what felt so difficult for us as a campaign to even get across to our city councilors and our other elected officials that, again, this is not new. Agreeably for the citizens in their city that might not have traveled outside of Duluth, perhaps so. But there again, we have IKEA, we have Aldi. There's many, many examples prior to the implementation or prior to passage of the ordinance in which people had experienced what we are suggesting. So mm-hmm. Yeah.
And when you say IKEA and Aldi, you mean stores that already charged
charged it, right? And people who have the privilege of traveling outside of the state had experienced bag fees. You know, if anyone had gone to California or Washington State, but again, it was not new. And so, to your question, did the delays help? I suppose, but. It's some of the timeline has now become a little foggy to me, but one of the delays that was proposed and introduced by council, they had let me know that the stores are already had all the information and other signage ready to go. And so I was like, well, if that's the case, why are you delaying it?
Well, you know, I was going to say there, and I'm going to continue to be Pollyannish about this, and everybody love each other, that listening to what you say, and again, the delay, you know, did take, if anybody was worried about it, they you know, you got a reprieve, right? So that delay, if nothing else, told the stores, okay, there's time for you to prepare. So that, you know, they didn't have to all of a sudden on Saturday say, okay, no bags or whatever, right? You know, they could look at, as you said, Super One, and, you know, I'm not going to speak for them or whatever they did or didn't do, but could look at what IKEA or Audi does or whatever. Yeah. But, one other store I want to point out, and I did point it out 3 years ago, is Target. And Target actually gives you 5 cents for bringing in your own bag. I thought they would stop that after the... you know, the bag fee took effect, and they don't. So if I go to Target, you're actually saving, repeat for us again, the bag fee is how much?
It's 5 cents.
5 cents. And then Target gives you 5 cents. And if you bring more bags, boy, you could make money going to Target, right?
Yeah, there's a whole cottage industry right there. Like, you know, but I think, you know, just as a reminder to the audience, especially those in Wisconsin or municipalities outside of Duluth, the whole intention with the fee was not to collect money. It was used as an incentive to encourage people to remember. Behavioral economics tells us that we're sadly incentivized by the stick, not the carrot. And so
the stick being the fee as opposed to the carrot being the target practice of rewarding you, right?
Or the Target or other stores saying they'll give you 5 cents, right? Because, shifting the conversation slightly around the introduction, if I may, what I thought was interesting in some of the complaints that we did hear some complaints when the fee first went into place was by a number of consumers who were upset that the stores were charging for paper bags as well as plastic bags. Mm-hmm. And so it was somewhat interesting because we had warned city council that for the impacts, the ecological impacts to be realized, that one would have to put a fee on both paper and plastic. And that, in fact, the stores were encouraging that. The businesses were encouraging a fee on both because paper is, in fact, more expensive than plastic. So
with for the stores to buy.
Yeah, for it to buy. Thank you. Right. So when the fee first went into place, I was actually sort of pleasantly surprised to see Super One, who never responded to any email or or letter or phone call ever. There they were with a fee on both paper and plastic. But unfortunately, it did confuse the citizens that had been following this issue and were, and for those that weren't excited, this upset them greatly for the first couple of weeks. But
To be sure, the fee is for both paper and plastic, right?
No, that's what we had asked City Council to adopt.
But
in their infinite wisdom, they decided to just go for plastic. And then the businesses went and applied a fee on paper and plastic. And we have to remember, it's within the store's right to charge it. It was never, there's no, it's not written to the Constitution that of this country that citizens are entitled to a free bag. It's the right choice of stores without the ordinance, stores can charge, you know, $20 a bag. It's, they can do whatever they want, right?
Right. So. My knowledge of consumer law, and this is not the legal person speaking, but it's from having covered it as a journalist, is that any retailer or merchant can charge you whatever they want, so long as they are clearly and conspicuously disclosed. So you can't get up to the register and it says $23.50 for a bag.
No, you're right. It's quite frankly, it's refreshing to laugh and chuckle about it. But at times it was just mind-boggling. And going into this campaign, I think our team recognized that would be a little bit of a challenge because we as a species, we get ingrained in our certain ways of practice and ways of being. And it's hard to undo, but it just... I think it was rather eye-opening to the degree that even our elected officials had such a hard time wrapping their brains around
Their groceries around this. So,
right. No, it was interesting. It was a good learning experience, I think, for many people. And there were a couple on our team who are new to policy, and it was a really great learning experience. For all.
Mm-hmm. Lastly, you bring to mind, this is completely anecdotal. It comes from one conversation with a bagger at a grocery store. I won't mention the grocery store or whatever, or I certainly don't know who the bagger was. Actually, seriously, a couple of them. I asked, so, you know, how's it going for you? You know, do you like these bags that I bring in? And by the way, I have, I guess my favorite is a Mall of America bag. I don't even know where I got it from because I don't think I got it from the mall. And it's a plastic bag itself, and it has lasted forever, and it's perfect size for grocery shopping. So, but in any case, I thought that would be a problem for the baggers at the store. And actually, you can take this as completely anecdotal, and anyone who wants to debate this can call us up and write to us, robin.washington@wpr.org. Once again, robin.washington@wpr.org. I would love to hear otherwise, but I was actually told we like the patrons' bags better. You know, the person behind me was not interested in me having this long conversation, so I didn't get into why. But the bagger seemed absolutely sincere about that. This person took my bag, you know, opened it up. I don't know. Maybe it's something about the, you know, the plastic bags that come, I guess, in a roll or something like that, are a little harder to get to. Who knows? I always put my bag down, my reusable bag, in front of my groceries on the belt. And so they pick it up. That's the first thing they do. And that bag is sitting there waiting for them, as opposed to them having to take it out of a bag dispenser, whether for paper or plastic. So having said that, I want to wrap it up with asking you, Jamie Harvey, what's your favorite bag? And by the way, anyone who wants one can pretty much get one now. I mean, obviously you can buy one. They're usually a dollar. They're at the checkout counters. But I've been involved in nonprofits where we've given away bags, and they seem to be everywhere now. So what's your favorite bag?
Well, I'm going to give you two answers. I have this one bag from an organization that I was had been part of. It's called the Food Commons, and it's just this really strong canvas bag, and you can put anything in it, right? You can, like, it is carries so, like, so much weight, and so I've had the experience where I've you know, the paper bag or the, you know, they've ripped, and I just love it. And then there's another, I think of it as my Mary Poppins bag, you know, her magic, her magic, what'd she call it? What's that name of her special bag? She has a name for it.
Oh, yeah, but, yeah, I'm thinking of the umbrella, but she's got that bag there too, right?
Yeah, yeah, but, you know, she pulls out a vase of, and with flowers, she pulls out so many things. And so I have this bag, and it feels like a cotton type material with clearly there has to be some sort of elastic in it, but you put things in and they just keep disappearing, and you wonder, but it has some strong web handles, and this thing is just a miracle. So it can hold a lot. So
we've been speaking with Jamie Harvey, a leader in the Bag It Duluth campaign that successfully pushed for a fee for using plastic bags at stores and went into effect in Duluth last October. Thank you for joining us, Jamie Harvey.
It was a pleasure, Robin. Thanks so much.
I locked myself up in a
room. Coming up, Rich Massey, Jermaine Jimberly, and the North Stars. Welcome back to Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington. Most of the country is finally venturing outside again in what we hope are the waning days of COVID-19. But be warned, it's not over yet, and I know because I got it recently. And it wasn't the no big deal, mild kind that we seem to be hearing about. I'm back almost up to speed, but it's a reminder of why we were locked up for so much of the last 2 years. A couple of people who've put that time to good use are Rich Matson and Jermaine Gimberling, who are just now releasing a bunch of songs they recorded during that shut-in time. Welcome to Simply Superior, Rich and Jermaine.
Hello, thanks for having us.
So how bad was it for you?
Well,
you certainly were taking it seriously because you spent time indoors and creating stuff.
Yeah. I tell you, this was the longest I spent in 40 years not playing music with my friends on a regular basis. Hmm. I mean, I've been in bands since I was about 13 years old in 1980. And now we've got the North Stars, Rich Manson and the North Stars. And I just took this time to write a lot of songs about it and make music videos of songs and post them on YouTube and just trying to get creative and find new ways to spend time. And, Yeah.
You're not alone doing that, although we've had several people on the show who said, nah, I'm not writing anything new, and I'm not writing about the pandemic. And you know what I'm doing? I'm rehabbing a house, is what one performer told us.
Yeah. Well, I've had opportunities to do that.
Yeah, we did do some projects, too.
Yeah, there's some projects.
Luckily.
And the two of us together working on music, and we'd go out in the field and make a little music video and stuff like that, or behind the house, or you know, find interesting locations to make little music videos.
Yeah, we'd start using iMovie and start having fun with that. That's how we released our last album before this new one coming up.
Mm-hmm.
We did a virtual album release for our last album.
Yeah.
We put together a string of music videos that we made ourselves. And I don't know, it was a lot of fun. We learned a lot about, just video editing and what goes into that.
But it also helped us stay connected with people because everybody was doing the virtual thing. And, you know, at that time, thank goodness we had it.
Well, you know, that's the silver lining to this. Again, having gotten this thing, it's no fun. But seriously, one of the benefits or one of the good things we did get out of it is all this virtual performance stuff. And it's, not just being able to perform with somebody from around the country or around the world, but just, as you said, the technical stuff.
Oh, I wish there was a way that we could rehearse online just with, but that technology isn't quite there.
Yeah, it was
but
always a little
we
delayed.
We weren't able to get drum tracks from our drummer. He's got a little studio in his backyard, and he was emailing me drum tracks for some of these new songs. Our bass player was recording bass tracks at home and emailing me bass tracks. So we cobbled together probably 8 or 9 songs just from doing remote sessions.
And how do you get do you have a metronome or something like that?
Oh, yeah. I'll record just like the basic guitar and a vocal to a metronome, and then I'll send that to our drummer, and he'll
he'll do his drums, and then I'll put everything on top of his drum track.
We are talking to Rich Mattson and Jermaine Gimmerling. They are speaking to us from what lights of the Iron Range. Is it
Sparta, Minnesota, just outside of Eveleth, between Eveleth and Gilbert?
A location in the woods. That's how it comes up on the map. It's not even on the map.
And the population is, when you're in town?
Oh, about 50.
All right, 48 when you're not. So
yeah.
Well, let's hear what might be the magnum opus from that time, The Island of Guitars, and maybe you could set it up for us. Tell us what it's about.
Greetings from the Island of Guitars. That's our new single. It just came out on April 11th, and it's a song I wrote while I was walking around with my dog, and the melody came to me, and the first line I say, I lock myself up in a room or a tomb or a womb. We'll find out pretty soon. And the lyrics just fell out.
All right, let's give it a listen.
I locked myself up in a room or a tomb, or is it a womb? I'll find out pretty soon. I'm so glad for the tunes and for you. If I wish I'd be sad. Follow the muse to my friends. I bring you greetings from the island of guitars.
What you need. And that was Greetings from the Island of Guitars by Rich Matson and the North Stars. We're speaking with Rich Matson and Germaine Gimmerling. That song is part of a bunch of new material they're busting out after being shut in for the pandemic. Although you've been out performing already, you were just at Earthrider and Superior for the Ukraine Doctors Without Borders benefit.
Yeah,
we've taken a few gigs here and there, and it's hit or miss. We played in January in St. Paul at the Turf Club, and the night of the show there was a blizzard, and that was when the big Omicron surge was happening. So we were
canceling lots of shows.
We lost some people with that, but we've got a lot of stuff coming up this summer and a lot of outdoor shows, which is great because you feel a little safer playing outdoors. Got used to the outdoor sound, I'll tell you that, over the past 2 years.
Yeah, more anxiety with that.
You see these, I keep watching videos of these concerts at First Avenue and places like that. And we actually went to a concert a couple weeks ago. And oh boy, it was packed and it was tight. And there was not a lot of mask wearing.
But they were doing everything right.
I was a little bit uncomfortable with it, but they're checking your back status.
They're doing all they can.
And that helps a lot.
You know, I did notice that this summer, I mean, everybody, of course, you know, we're all like waiting to be shot out of a cannon. And so when we did have all the outdoor venues last summer, that was great. And I think maybe some of the venues kind of forgot about that, you know, once they said, okay, you're booked with us, come on in. Well, inside isn't quite, you know, we don't quite have the all clear yet. So take us back a bit. Tell us the origins of the band and your own beginnings. How about Germaine? Let's start with you.
Okay, well, I'll try to make it real short and quick, but I was in my first band in Minneapolis in the late 80s, early 90s, and we were an all punk rock girl group.
Let's just stop right there. You know, why talk about anything else, right?
But we put out some records on a label that was called Spanish Fly on Twin Tone Restless Records. And Rich and I had met many years ago in music. Our bands played together at various places, but we never really hung out at that time together. I continued with that band for a couple years. Then I moved to Ely, Minnesota. And then I started in about 2006 playing music with some other musician transplants from the cities who decided to move to Ely and started learning and teaching myself acoustic guitar. Then eventually reconnected with Rich when he moved back to the Iron Range. And in 2010, I moved into Sparta Sound, but prior to that, had made a couple records with him here. And we just continue to write songs together. We kind of started out doing some duo stuff, which eventually brought us and augmented us into North Stars as it is now. So it's just been this ongoing continuation of what we've always done, and we just keep doing it.
And that's the short version.
Yeah, sorry, that's really short.
I like the short version. I accept one part of it, and you're also together for those who like to hear the behind the scenes, you know, lives of the rich and famous. Right?
Yep, yep.
Rich, you must be the rich part of the rich and famous.
Yeah, I started playing music pretty early in life. I started playing cello in third grade, and I wanted to play rock and roll and worked into that. You know, by high school, I was fronting my own band and playing around teen dances and wound up getting into the bar circuit and had my eye on moving to Minneapolis and taking over that town. And eventually I was down there and I started a band with my brother called the Glen Russells. And then I had a band called Old Yeller. And I wound up back on the Iron Range just mostly because I found the perfect place for my studio. And then met Germaine and we started playing music together, and we got this North Stars band, and it's been through several incarnations, but it's all pretty much rooted in rock and roll, folk music, and country.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned the cello. Do you still play it?
Well, at the time when I picked up the cello, I was listening to Electric Light Orchestra, and they had two cellists in the band, so I thought maybe I could rock and roll on the cello. They were offering it in the curriculum at Eblip, and I went to the orchestra director. I said, I want to join the orchestra, and I thought I was going to play bass, but they just were too large and intimidating, so I went with the cello, and I played it up until eighth grade, and then I switched to bass. Eventually, I did get another cello over the past 10 years or so, and I still know how to hold a bow, and I can play it. I can play notes out of it. It's not a very professional cello. It's kind of a
industrial.
Yeah. Yeah, I can barely get it in tune, but once I get it in tune, I can play some stuff on it. It's pretty fun.
All right. Well, and the rest of the band, who else is part of the North Stars?
Keely Lane.
Keely Lane is on drums. He and I have been playing together for over 20 years. We've got Kyle Westrick on the bass guitar.
Yeah, and I met him living up in Ely, and he's a great bass player.
And we've got Dan Anderson. He's the latest addition to the band. He's on keyboards.
All right. Well, let's hear another. How about Kiss the Sky, which has you doing solo, Jermaine?
Yeah, I wrote that song, actually. And yeah, Ryan Young performs violin on that.
Uh-huh. Almost a cello.
Yeah.
Ryan can play anything.
All right. And here's Kiss the Sky with Jermaine Gimmerling and Rich Mattson and the North Stars. And that was Kiss the Sky with Jermaine Gimberling and Rich Matson and the North Stars. Jermaine and Rich are our guests as we celebrate their emergence from being shut in and with all the music they created during that time. Where can we find out more?
I've got a website. It's www.richmatsonmusic.com, and that serves as kind of a hub for all of our musical endeavors. You can check out our band, Rich Matson and the North Stars. There's a really long and interesting biography on the page. there's a calendar where we list all our upcoming events, a link to my video channel on YouTube. Yeah, and some information about Old Yeller. And there's a musical discography and links to where you can hear all our latest stuff.
Great. Rich Matson. Matson is spelled M-A-T-T-S-O-N, and that was richmatsonmusic.com.
Yep.
One more to take us out?
In Flight is a single from our Skylights album that came out in February 2021. It's a song about flying.
It was actually our last flight before the pandemic.
I was about to say, you didn't do much flying during this time.
Oh, right? No, we sure didn't.
Mm-hmm. Did you fly somewhere good? Or
we went to Las Vegas on a work vacation.
Yeah, we're not gamblers. We like national parks.
We went out there and we went to Death Valley and we saw the sights and we walked around town and had a good time.
Yeah, and the song is, the words were inspired by the flights home. We were flying into Duluth, actually.
All right. We've been speaking with Rich Matson and Jermaine Gimberling. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for having us, Robin.
Well, you said that you would never fly, but now you gotta go back home. It would be such a long, long drive.
Welcome back to Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington, and I'm joined again by Rick Lubbers, the executive editor of the Duluth News Tribune. Hello, Rick.
Hi, Robin.
And Danielle Kading, the Superior-based reporter for Wisconsin Public Radio News. Hi, Danny.
Hi, Robin.
So, Danny, the first Softie arrived in the port of Duluth Superior this week with some, I guess you would say now, celebrated crew members aboard.
Yes, that's right. The first Salty, the Resco, arrived in the Twin Ports last week with Ukrainian crew members on board. And I spoke with Nikola Bakhtin from Mariupol, who expressed that he was scared for a couple of weeks while they were underway on the ship because he didn't know what had happened to his family back in the Ukrainian port city. He said he wanted to leave the ship and go find his family, but he was eventually able to connect with them and found out that they're now safe in Germany. But he said he still doesn't know if his home is still standing in the port city. And he said he wants to go back to Ukraine because it's his home, but he doesn't know if that's something that will happen depending on what happens there. And you know, the outcome of the Ukrainian war or the Russian war in Ukraine could also affect trade, too, here in the Twin Ports. You know, Russia and Ukraine together supply more than a quarter of the world's wheat, and disruptions to that supply could fuel higher food prices. And in Duluth, Scott Hillerin with Guthrie Hubner said it's unknown how that war could impact the grain trade out of Duluth Superior. But in the past, he said hurricanes in the Gulf of Mexico have affected business. And so if Ukrainians are unable to plant wheat, that could possibly mean that more grain would be exported out of the Twin Ports. But that still remains to be seen. And, you know, Ukrainians would typically be harvesting wheat sometime in the next several months. And if farmers can't get their harvest because of the ongoing attacks or ports and railroads are too badly damaged to move those shipments, then it could have an impact on countries in North Africa or the Middle East that are dependent on wheat from Ukraine and Russia. And the RESCO, when it went to the grain terminal at Connor's Point, it went to load up on about 16,000 short tons of spring wheat and about 5,400 short tons of durum wheat. And it's now going to be destined for Italy.
Well, a much different story than our normal salty visitors. On the shore, specifically on your lawn, Superior and Ashland are taking part in an event called No Mo May. What's that about?
Yeah, No Mo May. So 2 years ago, Appleton became the first city in the nation to adopt No Mo May. And the idea behind it is to allow homeowners to let their lawn go and become overgrown for a few weeks to boost the number of bees and other pollinators. So the initiative helps make sure that bees that are coming out of hibernation have a lot of sources to choose from to get that sweet nectar or pollen that they need. And so the initiative, everywhere it's been implemented, is optional and requires cities to temporarily waive enforcement of ordinances that require homeowners to keep up their lawns. And so this week, the Superior City Council passed a resolution for No Mow May, and also Ashland City Council also suspended enforcement as well, you know, to encourage people to take part in this. And the initiative has spread to cities like Wausau, Oshkosh, Fort Atkinson, and Stevens Point. And, you know, like dandelions on an unmown lawn, as my colleague said, this year the idea has spread even farther.
All right. Well, Rick, before we worry about mowing the rest of our lawns, we have to find them under all that snow. Is it finally gone? And how bad was it?
I don't think it's all gone yet. But if it seemed like it had snowed a lot for what's supposed to be a spring month, you're right. According to the National Weather Service in Duluth, the city has received 19.2 inches of snow in April through noon Wednesday, with several days left to go in the month. And that's compared to the average 6.8 inches of snow that we receive usually in April. But as bad as it's been, that's good enough for about the seventh snowiest April on record in Duluth. But it's not even close to the record. You'd have to go back to 2013 to find an April when 50.8 inches of snow fell, which was the snowiest month in Duluth's recorded history. And April 2013 even topped November 1991, the infamous Halloween blizzard month, when 50.1 inches of snow fell. So overall, the winter of 2021-22 sits at 94.2 inches of snow in Duluth, and that's about 7.1 inches more than average, but only good enough for the 24th snowiest winter on record, well shy of the record 135 inches that fell in 1995 and 1996. So, yes, April's been miserable for sun seekers and summer dreamers, but it could be a lot worse, and it has been.
All right. Well, finally, there was another shooting incident on Wednesday, this one officer involved and in Chisholm.
Yes, a felony suspect was killed when an officer involved shooting occurred in Chisholm on Wednesday. The fatal shooting came following contact made with a felony level suspect at the conclusion of what was a coordinated and widespread search, according to the St. Louis County Sheriff's Office. No officers were injured in the shooting, and there was no further description provided of the suspect. The search, which started at 4:45 a.m. on Wednesday and included the Hibbing and Chisholm areas, yielded the suspect's unoccupied vehicle at about 7:15 a.m. Authorities then responded to the 200 block of Central Avenue South in Chisholm, leading to the fatal shooting confrontation with the suspect. The suspect was wanted in connection with a recent felony-level crime in Morrison County, Minnesota, and that's about 2 hours southwest of Duluth. Officers from Hibbing, Chisholm, Virginia, and the Minnesota State Patrol were all actively pursuing the suspect, along with St. Louis County Sheriff's Office deputies. Multiple officers, it appeared, fired on the suspect and involved officers, and the subject's name are being withheld at this time. What precipitated the shooting has not yet been made known, or if the suspect was armed. The Minnesota Bureau of Criminal Apprehension is in charge of the investigation and will determine if squad and body cameras captured the event. Life-saving efforts were performed by officers on the scene, along with Chisholm ambulance personnel and ambulance personnel from Hibbing as well. The subject was pronounced dead at the scene. The BCA will provide updates as the investigation unfolds.
All right. Well, we've been speaking with Rick Lubbers, the executive editor of the Duluth News Tribune. Thank you, Rick.
Thanks, Robin.
And Danielle Kading, the Superior-based reporter for Wisconsin Public Radio News. Thank you, Danny.
Thanks, Robin.
You can stay updated on these stories and all the regional news anytime at WPR.org and DuluthNewsTribune.com. And that's it for this edition of Simply Superior. We leave you with more of the music of Rich Matson and Jermaine Gibberman. I'm Robin Washington, and as always, stay safe, everyone.
Well, I never met my neighbor rolling right across the street. Five little kids out playing, and three or four big dogs.